Snap Tanner on a three-step. Boise gets in. He's got room to the right. Tucks. Throws anyway. In the end zone it is. Caught! It's caught for a touchdown! Mitchell Juergens leaning back and hauling it in. Somehow he caught it. The Cougars do it again in the last minute.
It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 201. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Another terrific comeback win, and you get another podcast of us talking about it. First, we relive the game and talk about the biggest plays and what we learned about these Cougars. We then preview UCLA and make outrageous predictions like we always do. We also discuss player discipline, women's soccer, women's volleyball, and Cougars making waves in pro football. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And listen to us right now. Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 201. Matt, what's up?
What is going on? Happy 201, huh?
Is that an area code?
I was just thinking that same thing. We should Google that. Hit the Google machine.
201. Area code 201 in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Covering most of Hudson and Bergen counties.
Yes.
I have no idea.
Including
what
that is. Hoboken and Hackensack.
Hackensack. Secaucus as well. Hoboken, Hackensack, and Secaucus.
Those are three very unfortunate names for places.
They don't sound like real places.
They don't.
I feel like that those aren't real places, except the thing is, I think I've been to all three of those places, so I actually do know that they're real. Well, Matt, we're going to start from the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
We don't usually start with the tweet bag.
You're kind of throwing us all off here.
But that's kind of, I try to throw things up.
You try to throw things up. You know,
oh, man. It's been a long day. It's been a long day. Trying to throw things up. I'll throw you up here in a minute.
You're only making it worse.
Anyway.
You know, but sometimes when you're not feeling well, that's the only way to feel better.
That's true. That's true. So Justin Thornton on Twitter, that's at Justin Thornton, he asks, could you do a CPR class on the podcast? It would be a good service to the BYU fan base at this time. Justin, I have to agree with you. I don't think either of us... Well, I've been certified in CPR, Matt, in the past, but that was a long time ago.
I'm also not currently certified, but I'm pretty sure that CPR instruction requires a little bit of like hands-on in-person training. I'm not sure how effective a podcast is as a medium for that particular training, but
you
The point still stands.
You old fogey. Like, you don't think new media can step in and do the job, you old, old man. You probably still want to read newspapers and, and you know, write out your term papers on a typewriter.
Typewriter? Old term man. Papers? You know when the last time was I did a term paper?
I don't know.
Term just, papers? What are you talking about,
just
term
making
papers?
This crap up as I go along. So, I mean, we'll get into this, Matt, but I have there has never been... I don't believe this many, two games to start a season like this. I was going back, and I couldn't find anything like this for BYU.
I think this would be hard to find for most teams.
Yeah.
I mean, this has really been a remarkable couple of weeks as far as, you know, heart-stopping wins.
Yes, yes. So we'll get into that later because we're going to talk about where those two finishes stand all time in great comeback victories at BYU. So... let's jump right into, because we got a lot going on here, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
I never get sick of you doing that, by the way.
Yeah, see, I know, and I don't either, but my wife made a comment about it the other day. She's like, you go back there to record your podcast, and then every once in a while I just hear you yelling.
Yes. Yes. What is wrong? This is a podcast. It's not Ward Choir.
What does she think? What does she think I'm doing in here?
I'm
making podcast magic. That's what I'm doing.
I don't know what she thinks, but You just need to keep saying that. And if you occasionally throw the word nude at the end, that's cool too.
It's never been confirmed that I've actually done that.
Yeah, just like I've never said that.
Okay, wait a minute.
And a cat wait made a it.
All right? Okay, we're really going to go there this early? First of all, fact. Okay?
Fact.
You have said a cougar, what, a cat and a bear made it. You said that.
And you've
whether
said,
or not I've ever used the word nude in the particular introduction to the segment which we are trying to start right now.
Poorly. We're starting it poorly.
Debate. Up for debate.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough.
Yet
fair enough.
To be confirmed.
All right. All right. We'll confirm it later. All right. Matt, we've been given updates on the women's soccer team and the women's volleyball team, so we will start there. The women's soccer team, once again, a couple of shutouts. Only one. Sorry. Only one since we last talked against UNLV. No, and Utah State. Sorry. 1-0 and 2-0. So besides one goal to Stanford, that is the there have been no other goals scored by the opposition.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, they're all right. They're doing okay so far. They're ranked what, fifth now in the country. So fantastic, Oregon.
You know,
State.
I'd love to see them get another shot at Stanford.
Yeah, it would be nice on a neutral field or in Southfield in Provo.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll see something in the tournament. We shall see. We shall see. So, the women's volleyball team also looked good. They've got Idaho State, not Idaho State. They beat Oregon State. They've got Utah and Utah Valley coming up this weekend against Oregon State. Alexa Gray, career high 13 digs and 26 kills, and Cozy Burnett had 11 kills as well. They were dominant, and they're looking really good. I mean, they've got some big games coming up in the schedule, but it's been a very good start for the women's volleyball team as well.
Yeah, other than the loss to USC, they've really dominated.
Yes, yes, they've had quite a few just absolutely dominating smash 'em sets, which is fantastic. I think it's fantastic. So, Matt, everyone's talking about it, so we will talk about it as well, though I think our perspective might be a little different than others. The Deseret News reported, and then a lot of other news organizations have followed up on this, that
Lapu-Ahu?
I just put in an extra piece. Sorry, man. Man, I was going to make a joke about punching someone. Anyway, never mind. I'll pass it. I'll let it go. Lapu-Ahu. Gosh, can you just say the name?
Lapu-Ahu.
Thank you.
Louis Lapu-Ahu. What's so hard about this?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm terrible at pronunciations. I can't even say our last name correctly.
Neither can any announcer at ESPN.
Oh, gosh. Man, are they looking bad. At least I don't do this for a living.
Trevor Magnum.
Trevor Magnum.
Come on, what's wrong with these people?
Tyler Mangrum. So... he has been disciplined for his what do we want to call this? Can on the podcast, can I say a nut shot? Is that legal?
I was going to go with nut punch.
All right. Either way. So let me be very clear before we get into the rest of this, Matt. What he did was absolutely wrong. I thought so at the time, though I didn't think live he had connected, but it's apparent he connected. I thought at the time that's a punk thing. He should have been flagged. He could have been thrown out of the game. They could have elected to do that, and that would have been fair. But I will say I don't have any problem with the discipline being handled this way. Now, the national media, on the other hand, Matt, seems to have a problem. Do you have a problem with how Bronco Mendenhall is handling this?
I don't, mostly because I don't know what he did to handle it, and I'm okay with that. You know, it is what it is. He should have done that. He got a flag, and they're going to take care of that in-house, and I don't have a problem with the football programs taking care of stuff like this in-house. It was a personal foul, and I think in a lot of cases when a player commits a personal foul, it gets handled internally, and we just got to let it go. I don't think that BYU or Bronco Mendenhall owe the public an explanation of what they did to penalize or discipline Lapu'ahu. I think we just all kind of have to move on.
Yeah, and obviously the media does not want to. If we reach out back to the tweet bag, Justin Thornton asks, is all the outrage over the nut shot warranted? I think public shaming for media and fans helps no one. You know, one of the things that humors me is BYU fans getting all up in arms about Utah fans saying, you know, we're a dirty team or whatever. I don't really care what Utah fans say about BYU. They're obviously just trying to get a rise out of you. So you're feeding right into their hands. That doesn't seem like, I think I'm mixing my metaphors. But the point is, you just ignore them. That's what I find with Ute fans. Just ignore them. They'll go away eventually. Well, actually, they won't. But you won't be annoyed because you won't be paying attention. But, Matt, is the media jumping on this justified, or is this just the media being the media?
This is just the media being the media. BYU's in the news for a couple of big finishes. If BYU were 0-2 right now, nobody would care.
Nope.
This would not be a discussion. I was driving into work this morning on Mike and Mike. They were talking about this. But what I thought was interesting is that they then brought in a discussion about what Pac-Man Jones did to Amari Cooper. And they were like, well, clearly that's worse. Right? But, you know, and even the tweet from Chancellor James here, and without getting into, you know, how the whole thing went down, but his whole tweet about I'm okay, I appreciate everybody's support. I mean, it's like people are talking about this like Lapu'ahu like broke into his house and stole all his food.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? Like
this was
like he's gonna have to go talk to somebody about this because he got punched in the tenders on national TV. Let's look at this for what it is.
Punch in the tenders.
I did. But let's look at this for what it is. All right, it was a stupid decision.
Stupid.
He shouldn't have done it.
Dumb.
This is two football players that got in a tussle after a play, and Lapu'ahu took a cheap shot on him.
This guy hit him late. It wasn't called, and mostly on fumbles is not called. I still think.
And it was. They were having trouble with the whistles all night down on the field.
Good.
It was so loud.
Have you ever
on the false starts? The players never heard the whistle.
Stop it with the so loud. Give me a break. That reffing crew screwed up at least four false starts. You can use your arms. You step in front of the quarterback. The Boise State quarterback took a hit on one of those plays, and so did one of their wide receivers. That crew did a terrible job managing those false start penalties. I think overall they did fine, but you rarely see that except out of like those 100,000 people stadiums in the fourth quarter. You don't see that in the first quarter in Provo.
And certainly not multiple times in a game. I will give you that. It happens once. You're like, okay, we're going to have to step in here, get in the way, or do whatever to stop the play, right? But had somebody gotten hurt, I mean, that would have been a real problem.
If you're the Boise State coach and your quarterback got lost for the season on a hit that didn't count, I mean, anyway, I am with you. This is not something that requires national outrage. It's just not
punch. It's not punch gate.
No, I mean, I saw one tweet about how this was as bad that the BYU team is like Mike Tyson biting Evander Holyfield's ear dirty. Give me a break. This is not a dirty team. There's a couple of players that might be described that way. That would be fair.
There is some pulling and twisting and stuff, but you know, if you watch enough football and you pay attention, or you talk to people who've played football at this level, we see a very small percentage of what actually goes on that level.
But I will say this. I am not for any of that. I think all of it's garbage and the nut punch, twisting, any of that stuff should not happen. But when it does happen, let's have the right amount of angst about it instead of acting, like you said, like he broke in and stole all of the guy's food. Which, if an offensive lineman gets in and steals all your food, he's taking all of it.
No, he's not taking just a snack.
Yeah, he's taking...
He gets into the pantry, it's all gone.
Yeah, you're Your Twinkie's
gone. That was a very
gone.
Strange analogy I just used.
Yes, yes, it was. So, Matt, BYU is ranked in both polls.
Woohoo! Yeah.
I don't care. I know it gets people excited. I really don't care that much.
You don't care at all? I think it's pretty cool to get ranked.
Yes, at the end of the year. If we're not ranked at the end of the year, do you think anyone's going to be like, remember week two we were ranked? That was nice.
Somewhere it will be written that, oh, that team was ranked for a week or for 2 weeks during the course of the season. Somewhere that will get written down.
Yeah, sure. But it's fine. It's good. The press is good. It's not a big deal. It does not help you beat the next team on the schedule. Let's go to the NFL. We talked a little bit. You talked a little bit about if you watch this game at the next level. Let's talk about the next level, Matt. Wani Unga was awesome against the Cowboys before
yes.
Eli Manning and Tom Coughlin were morons. So 12 total tackles, an interception, and a pass defensed. Again, did I mention that Eli Manning and Tom Coughlin screwed up game clock management?
Oh, my gosh. What in the world?
Holy shnikes. And can we stop with the Tony Romo hate already, please? He's a good quarterback. He's better than Eli Manning, by the way.
You know what, though? Do you know what?
If you were drafting, if you were drafting today, who are you taking? You taking Romo or you taking Manning?
Now, is it DirecTV Romo or is it Arts and Crafts Romo?
What's Eli Manning's bad Eli Manning? Bad comedian Eli Manning?
There's a bad comedian Eli Manning.
I would say Arts and Crafts Romo versus bad comedian Eli Manning.
I'm taking Arts and Crafts Romo. Yes. I might take Arts and Crafts Romo over DirecTV Romo.
That's
Arts and Crafts Romo is maybe my favorite alter ego of them all.
Okay, that's
tiny,
fair enough.
Tiny Randy Moss is pretty good, too. Only because I can sympathize with
I believe
them.
That's petite
The
Randy
top
Moss.
Shelf is hard to reach.
Not for me, it isn't, Shorty. So anyway, Unga has a massive first game with the Giants. Congratulations to him. He did great. Ziggy Ansah, two tackles and a sack in their loss to San Diego. Kyle Vannoy did not play. Alani Fui, one tackle. I believe it was special teams in Arizona's win over New Orleans. And then in the CFL, Beck and Colley hooked up for three passes for 27 yards and a touchdown in a loss to the Ottawa Red Blacks. They have such cool names up there. And Beck was 20 of 29 for 207 yards, a touchdown, and a couple of picks. So that's our Cougars in the pros section. We need something for this. A jingle.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I'll come up with something. It'll probably just be me yelling.
Yes, that's kind of what we do. Or it could be, I should get a sound clip of Roger Goodell talking and people booing.
Yes.
That would be good.
Yes.
Hate Roger Goodell. Anyway.
Fire Goodell.
Fire Goodell. I've got my t-shirt. One thing that's not Cougars in the news but is interesting to Cougar fans is the Texas Athletic Director was fired, and Justin Sweeney, that's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter.
Sweeney! He gets his own sound effect.
Yes, he does. He's I believe, outside of, well, actually, he may be the only one who's heard all 200 and now one episodes.
The only one we know of.
So if you also have heard now 201 episodes, let us know. We'll add you to the wall of shame. What are you doing with your life? Really.
But there's no promise that you'll get your own sound effect.
No, we can't.
Because Sweeney has
that.
Also been a very active participant in the Tweetbag.
Yes, well, yes. Back when the Tweetbag started, I think he was the only participant in the Tweetbag.
Sometimes I think he camps out in the Tweetbag.
Yes, he spends a lot of time there. He says, should Tom Homo apply for the Texas Athletic Director job? I believe he's trolling, though.
I believe the technical term for this is trolling.
Yes, because of our recent victories. Matt, is BYU responsible for this?
I'll tell you what. When Taysom Hill got hurt, Mac Brown did say, you know, he's a commentator now.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, Taysom Hill's one of the reasons I'm sitting here today.
And then
and that's an actual thing.
And then Mark May said something nonsensical and stupid right after that.
Right before that and right after that, as it turns out.
Yeah, as it
but,
turns out.
But maybe Yeah, I think it's definitely part of it. You know, the way that football program is perceived is extremely important to the University of Texas, and they have struggled. And you know, you were kind of anticipating Charlie Strong to make a change with the offense. You know, after the first couple of weeks, you thought you'd see something there, and he did, made a change to who's going to be making the offensive play calls. But clearly, there's still shakeup to be had at the University of Texas.
Yes.
They try and sort through some of this and try and bring that program back to where it's been historically.
Yeah, and there's already rumors, crazy ones like Jim Harbaugh, who's not leaving Michigan to go to Texas, by the way. FYI. I have no inside knowledge. It's just, it's what is inside my head. It's called common sense.
I see why am I.
In case you missed it.
Harbaugh's not going to Texas.
Yes, yes. You don't have to use those letters when you're talking. You know that, right? There's not a 140 character limit to your talking. Maybe there should be. Maybe people are like, Adam, there should be for you, bud. Yeah, well, my podcast. I'm going to keep talking. So Matt, let's talk about that Boise game.
Yes.
Let's.
I'm still excited about it. I'm still showing people the replay on my phone.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. I mean, I don't think it's as good as a finish as a last-second Hail Mary at Nebraska, but it was a pretty awesome finish. What did you learn about the Cougars this week?
Well, I'll go ahead with the Captain Obvious one. The Cougars are resilient.
Ooh, look at you. Are you going to do alliteration? Are they all going to be R's, all your takeaways or something like that?
R. No,
well, that was terrible.
You're
and I'm
terrible.
Totally leaving it in.
You're terrible.
Also terrible.
No, but really though, look at this. You got a freshman quarterback.
Yeah.
Team got behind. You know, came out. Boise State really punched him in the mouth.
Yes, they did.
there's a Lapua joke in there, but I'll leave it alone.
Yeah, just in the mouth.
But they really came out. They really did. And this is a team that with an untested. Really an untested quarterback. I know you can go back to the Nebraska game and doing what he did or whatever, but in a start.
His first start.
Against a ranked team, at home, you know, all those types of factors. For them to be able to come back and figure that out. I mean, you look at what happened to the run game. I mean, the run game was non-existent. People were losing their minds. Twitter was melting down. Fans were booing. People were losing their minds. Right?
Yep.
And then at some point in the game, at least for a period of time, it started to click a little bit. They started moving the ball on the ground. You know, and Tanner just looked unflappable in this particular situation. So I think that we learned some of those things about this team, the ability to play from behind, and this team has demonstrated a real ability to finish.
Yeah.
In the fourth quarter, which I think goes back to training, conditioning, and also mindset.
So my first takeaway was yards per pass attempt, Matt. So against Boise State and Nebraska combined, so far this year, the BYU offense is averaging 9.17 yards per pass attempt. That would be the best we've had since Max Hall left. And some will say, yeah, well, they might not keep that up this all year. Nebraska and Boise State, by the end of the year, may be the best two defenses we played all year.
Fact.
Almost 11 yards per attempt against Boise State. Now, I get it. Two passes really make that day, right? The 87-yard pass, is it 87? 77?
It was 84 yards, the first touchdown.
To Juergens, right, mm-hmm. You know, there at the beginning. And then, of course, the deep pass to him at the end, which, by the way, game ball for Mitch Juergens, right? Just hand him and Tanner the game balls, right?
Can we give him a second scholarship?
Yes, yes, yes. He definitely earned it. That and Nacua. So, you know, 10.66 yards per pass attempt, 25 yards per catch for completion. That's un-freaking believable. We don't even, the last few years, we haven't been able to even pull up those kind of numbers against UNLV.
It's insane.
So I learned that. What else did you take away from this game?
This defense is pretty good.
I'm going to have a slightly different conclusion, but
really?
More.
Really?
I don't think this Boise offense is very good, and I don't think the Nebraska offense is that great. We'll find out how good they are this week against a really good offense.
Well, but that's part of that's the thing is I think this UCLA offense that they're about to face is on another level.
Yes.
From the first two opponents they've seen this year.
Yes.
But I think we all can agree that the return of Nacua is a big deal. It is a big deal.
He is those plays he made. Now, granted, the last interception, it was a terrible throw, and it came right at him, right? So good job for him being in the positioning.
But was I the only one screaming, get down, get down, get
you
down?
You were not the only one. But the thing is, that's a guy that needs to get the ball in his hand. They need to figure out a way to get him the ball on offense. The problem is
he was taking it to the house.
He was his goal was two letters TD, and then hug the ref. I think the defense is good. I was going to say my takeaway is we have got some playmakers on defense. Longy looks so much better than he did last year. He is fast. The other part was Kafusi running down wide receivers from behind. Kafusi, Longy, and Nacua. Now, Warner played solid. There were other guys that played well. Hanneman still, he can look like the greatest cornerback on one play and then look like he's totally has no idea what he's doing on the next play. which, you know, is probably an experience thing. He's obviously a gifted athlete, and he's trying to pick some of that up. But, man, Nacua.
But you know what? I love his upside, and I think in time we're going to have something great on our hands.
Yeah, but Nacua, that pass block when he jumped basically over the guy,
yeah,
phenomenal. So those are our top takeaways.
Longy. I mean, Longy and the stunts up the middle.
Yeah.
Man.
And he's fast. He's fast. If you'd asked me, and I did ask you, and we talked about this, who we thought was the, you know, is it Warner or Longy that's the future Kyle Van Noy, Alani Fua, you know, type. I answered Warner. I believe you did as well. After these first two games, I think it's Longy. My opinion has changed. Has yours?
Yeah, my opinion has changed, but I mean, he still has some work to do.
Yes, and Warner is doing well.
Right. We're only two games in.
Yes, but against two quality opponents. Matt, speaking of that, one of the things whenever you look at these games and kind of decide how excited you are about the victory is trying to figure out how good was the team you were playing. And two games in, it's kind of hard sometimes to know how good the team is. So Matt, when it all is said and done, are you doing over-under for a final ranking of Boise, 29.5, over or under? Under being better than 29.5.
I'm taking the under. I think they'll be better than that.
I do. Well, I think their offense is going to be better, and that defense is good.
The defense is very good. That Moxie kid is good.
Yes, yes. And they're you know, they had some good scheme, and I was very impressed by the offensive line figuring out eventually. But, man, they made our offense look absolutely terrible besides that one play in the first half. They just looked terrible. So I agree with you. I think they're a top 30 team. So friend of the podcast, Dick Harmon, in the we've just been talking about the defense, Matt, but he had a column where he basically says, I know everyone's infatuated with BYU's Tanner Mangum and, of course, the Hail Marys and all that stuff, but he said that the defense, so he kind of backs up what you're saying, Matt, that the defense, and we shouldn't forget some of the great plays the defense made, not just the turnovers, but also stuffing on short runs, and some other things, Matt. So here's your platform. Sing more praises to the defense.
Well, and he talks about the same stuff in his article, but the I loved the looks they were showing.
Yes.
You know, where you'd have like one or two down linemen, you know, maybe one down, maybe the only guy with the hand in the dirt was Kafusi over on the edge. And then you just got linebackers just kind of prowling around the line of scrimmage. You have no idea who's coming and who's not coming.
Yeah,
and I think there are some advantages to that. I think you've got to be careful, right? Because you can give up some plays there if everybody's not on the same page. But the ability to be able to make that transition in a week after losing to Aloma and execute it the way they did, I thought was very impressive. And I think that if you can continue to do that and maybe throw some stuff like that at a true freshman quarterback, you might be, then you find out what you really got, how good you really are. But and we've talked a little bit about the play of Longy. I think he looked really good. How many interceptions did Nacua end up with?
I think a dozen.
Yeah. So I mean, I there was a lot there in the defense to like.
Yes.
And in portions of the game where, you know, and I think I texted you something about this at one point during the game, but in portions in the game where the offense was really struggling, the defense kept us close enough to be in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think there is a the defense has shown some good signs. Now, granted, these weren't maybe the best offenses they'll see this year. I think UCLA and Missouri will probably both prove to be better offenses. Maybe even Cincinnati, though they're not doing as well as we thought coming out of the gate.
I'm not nearly as worried about Cincinnati as I was before.
No, we'll get to that towards the end of the program, Matt. So back to the agenda, there has been a lot of national press because of these two last-second victories. Of course, both of them being featured on ESPN / ABC. Ivan Mazel, said, is this a bad thing? BYU's averaging 34 points, two victories, but they've only had one drive of at least 10 plays in length. So I'm going to point out something he did not, Matt. Go fast, go hard. I'm going to make a bold statement here. It doesn't exist anymore. We are not a go fast, go hard team.
No, we're not doing that anymore.
And I don't hear people talking about it, but we ran against Boise. I got this all here. We ran 68 plays.
That's less plays than we ran against Nebraska.
That is less plays than we ran against Nebraska. The last time we ran that many, was against Nevada in 2013 when we were absolutely lighting them up, or we were losing that game. That's the loss. No, that's the win. We're lighting up Nevada, and we didn't do many. We are averaging so far this year. That's the other number that just, I mean, it kind of shocked me because, you know, we're this go fast, go hard team, right? 70 plays versus 80 last year and 85 the year before. 70 would be our fewest plays per game if it persisted throughout the year since 2010. Go fast, go hard is dead. We're not doing it. Now, we're not huddling, but, you know, and occasionally we do it, but it is not go, go, go anymore. We've had an adjustment by Anai, which seems to be working, so I'm not going to knock it.
Well, but I think what Anai's had to do is he's had to adjust to the personnel he's got in there.
Yes, yes.
He's got a new quarterback. He doesn't have the running backs to do it.
No. He's being smart. But Matt, the question for me is these miracle passes masking some actual problems with the offense?
I think we all know what the problems with the offense are. We can't run the football.
Yes, and second half, obviously, Hine had some huge runs, but that came after three quarters of ineptitude, basically.
And I think that Mangum still has a little bit of work to do on some of the, you know, shorter routes, the out routes, timing routes, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And what I keep thinking we're going to start seeing more of are things, you know, bubble screen type plays, getting the ball out on the perimeter to the playmakers to try and advance the ball, you know, on a shorter yard per play basis.
Yes.
That way. And we haven't seen much of that either. So I think that it's still a work in progress. So I think we know what the weaknesses are, and I think we know that there's going to have to be some adjustments made. So I don't know that I'd say that the big plays are masking anything, but they sure are bailing us out.
Yeah, they sure are bailing us out. I agree with you. They're not masking anything. I think anybody that's watching the team knows that the offense is a work in progress. With Hill being out, with Jamal being gone for the year, this is not the offense we thought we would see. which was going to be a run-based. Still, if Jamal and Taysom were there, I am absolutely convinced that we would still be a running team. This is not a running team. This is a passing team that's going to have to figure out how to run the ball better as the course goes on. But one thing I need to be corrected on, I was a little worried that this wide receiver group was more hype than reality. I am wrong. I was wrong. Nick Kurtz misses for whatever reason. Some people are saying it's because he was dinged up. Some people are saying because he didn't go after the first interception hard enough. Whatever the reason, he hardly played in the second half of the game, and it didn't really hurt us that much because you got Blackman making one-handed catches that should have been a touchdown, by the way. That was not offensive pass interference.
Let me
rephrase. Those officials were terrible. That was not a good game, and it wasn't uneven. It was just not cleanly officiated. Let me say that. By the way, do you taunt a wide receiver like with the money? Like, what was that?
That was very weird. I don't know what he was saying. I mean, I think it would make more sense if you knew what is it that he had said to Mitch Matthews. But I did like at one point, and I can appreciate this being only 5'9 myself, but I felt like early in the game, after one play, he said something to Matthews, and Matthews turned around and did like a patting him on the head motion, almost as if he was saying to him, like, what are you, like 4.5 feet tall? And, you know, being about the same size as that defensive back, at least height-wise, I appreciated that.
Well, I've tried to, for those of you that listened last week with our interview with Mitch Matthews, I tried to bait him into saying something like that about these short defensive backs of Boise State, and he did not take the bait. He did not. He's smarter. He's a senior. I might have been able to trick a freshman or sophomore with that question.
You know what? But he's a 6'6 guy who's been playing defenders that size since he was
his
in
whole
high
life.
School.
Yeah,
he's over it.
Yeah.
It's a novelty for, and it's something for, you know, ESPN people to talk about, you know, with the height of this receiver corps. But for Mitch Matthews, he's that tall every day.
Yes, he is that tall every day. I believe that's true. I believe we can verify that. So, Matt, let's tie the bow on Boise here. Great game, highly entertaining. Is it a top 10 finish in BYU history? Finish, not game, because obviously there are wins like the Texas win wins, which I would put above this just because of their significance, and especially the one in Austin. But is it a top 10 finish? While you think about it, let me give you a little data point here. Friend of the podcast, Jay Yeomans over at Deseret News, he says yes, he ranks it 10th all time. He's got behind it the Pittsburgh win in 1984. Now, obviously, that win is a bigger win. They beat the number 3 ranked team, and it helped them on their way to the national title. And it was a 50-yard touchdown with a minute 30 left on the clock for a 20-14 win. I don't know. I might put that Pittsburgh win ahead of it. And right ahead of it, he has one that's, I know, dear to your heart, Utah in 2000 in Salt Lake City. Because you were there.
No, you
weren't there. You were on your mission.
I was not there.
Sucker.
I was on a different continent at the time.
I was on my honeymoon. But the rest of the family was there because I got married the weekend before that.
Oh, I feel like you set that up that way just to rub it in.
I was trolling you. I believe that's the technical term.
But I think that game does finish ahead of this.
Yes, I agree.
When I get into the teens on this list, there are a couple that I would probably put ahead of the Boise State
game. Okay, so let's expand the question a little bit, Matt. What about the Nebraska win? Jay has it ranked 3rd, only behind Utah in 2006, obviously, the Beck to Harleen game, and the Miracle Bowl in 1980 in SMU. Obviously, I think most fans would put those as the two greatest finishes in BYU history. I don't know if Nebraska is 3rd for me or not, but it's pretty darn close.
I get it up into that 6th range, maybe 7th. I think the Missouri in 83 and Michigan in 84 beat it.
Yeah, I don't know that those finishes, the Michigan one, is as dramatic. But yes, I could buy that argument.
And I have a hard time ranking anything ahead of anything that happened in 1996.
I know you do. I'm surprised you didn't say that one against Kansas State's number one.
I think it's in the top. Oh, the one in Kansas State? Yeah, but it's top five. I wouldn't have
I'm okay with that.
And I'd have the A&M game in the top 10.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't have a problem with either of those. I also really like the 2001 finish against Utah as well. I was there. Were you at that game? Were you back home yet?
Jeez.
Oh, really? Is this hurtful for you?
What are you doing, man?
So in that game, my wife threw her back out. I think I've told this story. And we're at the game. And so we end up in the first aid room, and I'm watching this comeback on a, 5-inch television. Like, I think it was as small as my phone is now. And so my wife, because she's awesome, said, go watch it. So I walked out, and I'm standing next to a Utah fan as they're driving right before Guilford intercepts it. And he goes, they're going to force 1-2 down because our kickers stink. Because if you remember, they had several years of really bad kickers. And that's exactly what happens. is Guilford. I can see it still in my mind's eye. Anyway, I'm with you. I think we're probably rating these ones a little too high based on recency, and we may not remember some of these others, but man, what an awesome way to start a season.
Well, and they clearly belong in the discussion. I mean, are ridiculously, ridiculous.
Fantastic.
Finishes.
And the other thing I think we can all agree on is that interview with Tanner Mangum's mom went on way too long. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, let's get back to the game.
Yeah, let's get back to the game. And when she asked her the third question, I'm like, oh gosh, we need a veteran sideline reporter.
She seems like a very nice woman.
Very nice.
But there was probably a better place to put that interview.
Yes, yes, than while an important drive is going on. Yeah. Anyway, so let's talk about UCLA, Matt, because that's who the Cougars are playing this week.
Yeah.
UCLA, the Bruins. Last time BYU played them, we beat them 59-0. Yeah. So Andre Hutchins, that's at @AC_Hutchins, asks, he was at that 59-0 game in 2008. What are your memories of that game? Quite frankly, I don't have any.
I remember feeling that it was really anticlimactic because it all happened so quickly.
Yes.
I remember talking to people in the room and being like, is this really happening? Like, what am I supposed to do for the rest of this game? So like, this is so out of control.
Yeah. I don't really have, memories of that game because, unless there was something personal going on, blowouts to me are the games you forget, right? And that was a bad UCLA team. They open up with this win against Tennessee, and so we think they're good, and everybody thinks they're good, and then they, the rest of the way, were just this heckle and jive team? Mm. Jekyll and Hyde team, mm. Where, maybe they've righted the ship, and then they get, blasted by Cal and Oregon State in back-to-back weeks in October and November. So I don't really have any memories of it. So, sorry, Andre. I don't have memories.
Certainly not as memorable as the 2007 UCLA game.
And this is going to be a much better team than that 2008 squad was. So, Matt, let's look at who they've played so far. They have played UVA and UNLV. According to the Macy ratings, and Macy is my new favorite thing, the Macy ratings take, the 25... analytical rating systems and put them into one rating. Okay? So they have UCLA at 6, at 11 and us at 24. They have UVA at 68 and UNLV at 121. That's not good. So they haven't really played anybody. Does that give you hope? Or do you think it doesn't matter that they haven't played anybody? We're pretty sure this is a really good team.
I feel like we're pretty sure this is a really good team. They look pretty good against UVA. They looked like they had it together and they knew what they were doing.
Yes.
I don't know that the UNLV game really gives you any information at all that's useful.
The thing that gives me a little hope, okay, is that they have not taken the training wheels off for freshman quarterback Josh Rosen, okay? He is averaging 7.5 yards an attempt against very poor competition. That's not great. It's not terrible. He's completing 65% of his passes. Against a Bronco defense, he's going to have to do more than he's had to do against Virginia and UNLV. Bronco will make him beat us.
Yes.
And that may happen. So that's what I think. Well, let's key fact, as I said, just this is not so far. They haven't played a lot of great teams. Football Outsiders also has UCLA on their rating as the sixth best team in the country, Matt. So the computers, based on their initial inputs in the first few weeks, they like this UCLA team. They like them a lot. So, Matt, let's talk prediction. It's prediction times. Are you ready for prediction time?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. We're going to start with some over-unders, okay? Tanner Mangum yards, over-under 270.
Over.
I'm also going to go with over. Over under 2.5 touchdowns.
Over.
I'm going to go under. Over under 1.5 interceptions.
Over.
I'm also going to go over on that. So we both think he's going to have some turnover problems, but also put up some significant yards. BYU rushing yards, Matt. So this last game, let's see, and it all came towards the end. BYU, and I take out sacks in my special statistics. So as far as how many rushing yards will the Cougars get against the Bruins, against Boise State that had a very good run defense, we ended up with 35 carries for 102 yards on just the rushing plays, taking out the sacks. That's less than 3 yards per carry. Over under 105 yards rushing for the Cougars against UCLA.
Under.
I agree with you, and I'm going to go with the under. Over under 350 yards passing for the UCLA Bruins.
So give me the number again.
350.
Under.
I'm going to go over. I think we probably all know where I'm going. Of course, I was Debbie Downer last week too, wasn't I? So right now, Matt, the spread has UCLA at home favored by 16.5 points. Vegas thinks this is not much of a contest. Matt, are you taking the over or under on 16.5? You're taking BYU and
I'm taking BYU to cover the spread here. 16.5.
I am also taking BYU to cover the spread. The over-under of 60 for total points scored by both teams, are you taking the over-under on that?
Taking the under.
I am also taking the under. Interesting. We seem to be headed in a similar direction. So, Matt, give us, before we go to the final thing, give us two bold predictions. Bold.
Bold predictions?
Basically, something that will happen if BYU wins this game. Something bold, something crazy, something wild.
Fred Warner has 2 sacks and another linebacker has an interception.
Nice. I have one. Bold prediction. Tanner Mangum throws. Oh, this seems so blasé. I was going to say Tanner Mangum throws a game-winning touchdown pass with less than a minute left on the clock, but how bold is that?
Yeah, seriously, let's try something that doesn't actually happen very often.
If it doesn't happen every week.
That's not a bold prediction.
Any other bold predictions?
Besides Tanner Mangum throwing a touchdown with less than a minute left?
Yeah, anything else you got? I was going to say Nick Kurtz has 10 catches.
That's insanity. That's not bold. That's just insane.
No, it's bold and insane. It's both.
I like it.
It's both. So, Matt, prediction time. Who you got? What's the score?
I think that BYU will look respectable in this one. I think they do keep it close. I think they're in it in the fourth quarter with a shot to win, but come up just short. Final score is a UCLA win, 28-21.
So I think Tanner is going to struggle in this game, Matt. I think he's going to throw some costly picks. He might have a fumble. As you talked about with their freshman quarterback, I think UCLA's defense is going to try to do the same to our freshman quarterback. The difference here is I think their defense is better than BYU's defense. In the end, I see BYU falling 30-20. Again, respectable. They're not going to get blown out. They'll be close enough to keep it interesting throughout. The defense won't get humiliated, and the offense, but that lack of a run game is going to hurt us. They are going to load up the box and make Tanner beat them. And you say it is, I think, just a better team than the ones he's faced so far. So, Matt, that's not a great way to end a podcast. We can't end the podcast like that. We have to talk about something else. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to this is our new weekly segment. We're going to pick the games the rest of the season based on what we know now.
Yeah! All right.
Last week, we both had a win at Michigan. What do you got now?
I've got a win at Michigan. And I feel better about it now than I've ever felt about it in my life.
So Michigan right now on that Macy rating is 42nd. They are falling. They were 22nd in preseason in those ratings. So they are falling. Michigan does not look great so far. UConn, Matt, we both got wins, right?
Oh, I got a win there.
Let's not be dumb. They're ranked 105th according to the Macy ratings. East Carolina, Matt.
That's a win.
It's a win for me as well. Both of us had those same three games picked last week. Cincinnati, Matt, does not look great.
Nope.
I had that as a loss. I'm putting it as a win.
Oh, that's a win.
Yeah, you already had it as a win. Wagner, win.
Win.
That's ridiculous. Let's not be stupid. San Jose State looks worse than we thought, and we didn't think they'd be good. Win.
Win.
Missouri, they're looking pretty good, Matt. Last week, I had it as a win, and you had it as a loss. I'm going to change it. It's a loss.
Yeah, I'm still at a loss here.
Yeah. Fresno does not look great. Win.
It's a win, baby.
And we both had us beating Utah State. They've been a little bit of a mixed bag so far this year. I'm going to stick with my prediction that that's a win in Logan.
Yeah, if we were putting percentages on this, I might be slightly less confident, but I still feel good about calling this one a win.
And so we both have this as a 10-win season, which we said at the beginning, 10 wins is a special season with this schedule, right? Maybe not like an all-time great season, but a special one. One you look back and be like, awesome. Good year.
Yeah, if you would have sat any of us down in July and said, you're going to lose Jamal, you're going to lose Taysom, you're going to lose Tua Loma, all of this, you know, which those are the three big losses,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. You're going to lose those guys.
And you're going to be
2-0 going into
the season.
You're still
going to
win 10 games. You could come out of September 2-2. I would have taken that.
Yeah. Oh,
worst case scenario, we come out of September 2-2.
And I would have thought the worst case scenario, I think we talked about this a little bit last week, or maybe it was just you and I talking on the phone, Matt, but if you had told me those things were going to happen, I was going to say 1-3 is your best case scenario out of September. And now your worst case is 2-2, and I think it's going to end up being 3-1. And ranked, headed into a stretch of games that is probably, until that Missouri game in November, probably a bit of a cakewalk. Now, maybe Cincinnati pulls it together, maybe East Carolina look better in the coming weeks, and we don't feel that it's quite as soft as we feel now, but it's not looking as difficult even as it did 2 weeks ago. Not that middle part of the section schedule ever looked particularly difficult. So, Matt, let's see here. What else we got on the agenda? One up and one down. That's our new segment of other college football teams that one team you say, wow, this could be a team that's on the rise, or you could do and also pick a team that you thought, and we're talking about teams we think might make the Final Four, might make the playoff. So, Matt, who's your one up? Who impressed you this week?
Who impressed? Well, you know what? Actually, can I do it in the reverse order?
You can. You can do it whatever order you'd like to do.
And I've done it. I've done it both times that we've done this segment.
That's true.
But I'll tell you, one team that I think is way out of there that I thought might have a shot is Auburn.
Oh gosh!
Don't take me into overtime against Jacksonville State. Come on, guys.
It's pretty terrible. It's pretty terrible. The fact that they're still ranked, to me, just shows you how useless rankings are. They should not be ranked. They should not be ranked. It's ridiculous.
No, they should not be ranked.
They're one of the best 2018 teams in the country. Come on. That's laughable at this point. Laughable. I thought all the SEC lovers' heads were going to explode this past weekend. A team that I thought, so that's your one down. I am with you. I thought Auburn had a chance. I think that chance has flown by. One up, Matt.
One up. I think you got to go with Michigan State.
Yes.
You know, big win against Oregon. I think that the November 21st showdown with Ohio State, which is going to be at the Shoe, but I think that could be a game for a chance to get into the playoff.
Yes. Yes. I agree with you. I think I'm going to pick another team just so we discuss another team that I thought was impressive, but my top choice would have also been Michigan State. I'm going to take a little bit of a dark horse here, Matt. Oklahoma.
Interesting choice.
I'm not convinced that TCU and Baylor are as good as we thought they were going to be. So if somebody runs the table in the Big 12, not named them, them being TCU and Baylor, who went and played a ranked SEC team on the road and beat them? TCU? Baylor? No. That would be the Sooners. And I don't know how good Tennessee is, and that win may look worse as the season goes on if Tennessee piles up losses in SEC play. But as of today, it looks like an impressive overtime victory over what we believed, most people believed, was a decent Tennessee team. And if they run the table in the Big 12, at that point they're the Big 12 team that looks like they're going to make it, right?
They you get into the discussion.
Am I crazy?
I don't think you're crazy if those things happen.
Yes. I mean, they've got the stretch at the end. November 14th at Baylor, November 12th home against TCU, and of course the rivalry game in Stillwater. I believe that's in Stillwater, not at a neutral location, that they're going to have their hands full. The good news,
but I think they get to that stretch undefeated.
I believe they do, because it turns out Texas isn't any good. But how about those Jayhawks? I'm totally kidding. Kansas is terrible too.
Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
That's right.
I don't even know what that means.
I'm not sure either. Well, Matt, that is all we've got this week. There was no guests, so you got to hear us yap for like an hour.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand why people enjoy it. What am I talking about? We're awesome.
That's why they enjoy it.
I listen to myself talk all the time.
Podcast magic.
Podcast magic. And I hope I am again wrong and we have another magical victory to talk about next week.
I very rarely want to be proved wrong, but this is clearly one of those times.
Yes. So, of course, next week we will be recapping the UCLA game. We will be previewing a trip to the Big House in Michigan. We don't want the players to look ahead, but you and I, we can do that because we don't actually have any effect on the game.
None whatsoever, not even a little bit.
So, of course, we would encourage all of you to go to CougarFan.com to get all your BYU sports news. Follow us and our witty repartee, you like that, on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And, check us out on iTunes. If you like the show, give us a good review and tell your friends and neighbors, and we'll catch you next time.
Go Cougars!